Okay, I'm hoping that you can see that. Thanks very much, Edwin. That was an absolutely fascinating talk. And thanks everyone for joining. I can see at least five familiar names, existing colleagues, but hello also to new colleagues. The best part of my job, my favourite part of my job, is working with teachers. So it's a pleasure to be sharing with you some of the work that I've been doing with schools today. And thank you for your time. So I'm a PhD researcher. I'm at the Faculty of Education at the University of Cambridge, and I'm also a group coordinator for local children's charity Centre 33. They support young people with their mental health. So a lot of my work is quite practically focused. I'm a mixed methods researcher. So I'm looking at the quantitative, the statistics, but I'm also thinking about those qualitative real world implications. So that's really my background. And my research investigates the relationship between children's psychological well-being and their academic achievement and the implications for schools. So I hope you you find some of this interesting. I don't need to kind of highlight here that the use of the word crisis is not to be taken seriously necessarily, because I think Edwin highlighted some really important issues with how the media and how we indeed talk about children's well-being and the state that we're in. However, I did want to highlight that even pre-pandemic, we were seeing, you know, children in the UK having significantly lower well-being than their European counterparts. We can see that in international research over the past couple of decades. And more recently, you know, research conducted by the Children's Society, longitudinal studies looking at continued national declines in children's well-being. And more recently, again, the NHS digital study conducted last year found that whereas in 2017, we were looking at about one in nine children with a probable mental health condition, underlying probable, and in 2020, this did rise to one in six. However, caveats and everything that Edwin highlighted in his talk, so I don't need to do all of that around it, but clearly, there are implications of this pre-existing situation for the COVID pandemic. And for some children, though not all, I think that is really important to highlight, there could be some exacerbated symptomatology here. So just setting the scene there. And I wanted to illustrate the relevance of this, not only for education, but also for the life course. So what you're about to see here is just an illustration. Imagine I'm a painter. So this is not causal, but it is correlational. So I'm trying to weave together some of the existing research on the achievement well-being relationship, what we know. And what we know is that children's well-being age seven has been found to be significantly predictive of their end of key stage two attainment in high stakes assessments. And the same has been shown across different educational levels. This is a really recent meta-analysis published this year, which found a small but significant positive association between well-being and attainment. And what does this mean for later life? Well, I don't need to tell teachers that educational achievement is important for future employment. And the adults in unemployment or low-income jobs have been found to have significantly lower physical and mental health. And sadly, this then links back to any children of parents in unemployment. Children who have parents in unemployment report significantly lower well-being than their counterparts with parents in employment. So hopefully this just demonstrates, you know, the bigger picture, what this is all about. And whereas I'm sure many of the people in this room, this virtual room, would suggest that actually we need to think about all of these things in tandem. We need to think about educational outcomes, how that's linked to children's well-being, and take a whole child approach. This is not necessarily the case for everyone. And indeed, this report that was published by the Centre for Education Economics took a very different view. It suggested that policymakers must take seriously the idea of trade-offs in education, such as well-being versus achievement, and decide which goals to promote and which ones to discard. Furthermore, academics have also commented that what we're seeing is schools no longer being a place primarily for learning objective knowledge, and that actually this is likely to lead to a decline in academic standards. Of course, as psychologists and also as educators, we understand that this is not necessarily the case and that actually it's a far more complex picture. And this is something that I articulated in my kind of response to this dangerous discourse that I'm referring to here. So we need a whole child approach, but we also need a concrete understanding of well-being. And I want to just underscore, perhaps we can pick this up in the Q&A, how well-being is different to mental health. Well-being, again, this is not some sort of diagnosis. It's a holistic, multidimensional psychological construct, which has lots of different components. The main thing that I want to distinguish between here is how my work is looking at children's feelings as well as their functioning. In other words, their hedonic well-being, how they feel, their overall satisfaction with life, but also, and perhaps most importantly for education, their eudaimonic well-being. Eudaimonic well-being is a Greek term, it dates back as early as Aristotle, and it really means living a good life, living a fulfilled life. Things like, you know, having positive relationships with others, working towards personal goals. So collectively, this is really what I'm talking about when I'm referring to well-being. And I'm interested in how these different aspects of well-being associate with academic achievement. But I'm also particularly interested in the work of Carol Dweck, who I'm sure you're all familiar with. Her theory of self, purports that actually we all have a mindset which governs how we think about our attributes, characteristics, and traits, including our ability to maintain positive relationships with others, to increase our cognitive ability, whatever that means, maths, English, whatever children are applying themselves to. My work really investigates how mindset and motivational goals at school interact in this relationship between well-being and achievement. And I'm interested in the qualitative dimensions of that as well. How do children themselves make sense of what it means to work hard at school whilst also making sure they don't burn themselves out? They're not getting unrealistic. They're not putting pressure on themselves. And that was just to note that I'm interested in not just these, but other variables. So the project, very briefly, hello to the teachers who have joined the call, who are from one of the 17 primary schools involved in this project. I'm working with the best of the best. In phase one, we completed a questionnaire with the children. This is a self-report questionnaire, a validated self-report. It's looking at those different aspects of well-being. The children also completed standardized tests in English and maths. And in phase two, I've been lucky enough to visit just two of these schools to deliver a pilot of some of the well-being workshops I've delivered in collaboration with Cambridgeshire PSHE service. And I'd just like to unpack a little bit of that for you now. So in September 2020, the government introduced some new components to the RSE and health education curriculum. And some of the new components were somewhat overshadowed because obviously there was a huge discourse around things like sexuality, education, et cetera. But some of the new additions that weren't so much in the headlines were the additions of mental health and emotional well-being. And here is the PSHE Association's teacher guidance on these new components. And in the guidance, they talk about the use of expert visitors to come into schools and help work with children on these areas. So this is really where I came in. I designed these wellbeing workshops to look first at the hedonic aspects of wellbeing, to help children understand what it means to be well, how we can look after our wellbeing, what it means to be less well, reasons there. In the second part of the workshop, we developed our understanding of well-being to move on to eudaimonic well-being. Now, we'll just caveat this by saying, obviously, I wasn't using these languages with the children. It was child-friendly language. But it's really thinking about setting and maintaining goals. What are your learning goals at school? What are your personal goals? How do they feed into who you are as a person? This is really what we focused on. And of course, I did some post-workshop interviews with the kids as well. With any work like this, it's absolutely critical that we set some ground rules for how we engage. something as sensitive as mental wellbeing, we really need to establish a safe environment for children. The PSHE guidance, they do talk about setting ground rules. It wasn't a didactic workshop. It wasn't me saying, these are the rules you must obey. It was very, very open. So first children were asked, how are we going to communicate with each other? How do I know that I'm being listened to? How do you know that you're being respected and cared for? So really what happens was you ask them these questions and kids, you know, they love it. They're setting the rules for themselves, by which point I show this slide and they've already articulated all of these rules. They know that they shouldn't be speaking directly about other people's life experiences. They shouldn't be naming names. We can disagree with an opinion without disagreeing with the person. But I really just wanted to articulate that, you know, cultivating this safe environment is absolutely key, obviously, to these types of lessons. They're not regular lessons. So in part one, we really looked at emotional literacy. This is a quote taken from the statutory guidance from the government. And you can see that the emphasis is really on emotions, that they're normal, that we experience a range of emotions, and what makes us experience these emotions. So the learning objective aligned to this statutory guidance was to explore what it means to look after the well-being of ourselves and others in school. So the whole approach to these workshops was asking questions. What does it mean to feel good? Can we think of some good feelings? Writing them on the board. What about some less good feelings? Writing those on the board and having a discussion about those. And then really pinpointing together, working in small groups, what things make us feel good at schools? What are the things that make us feel less good? And there were creative activities. We did an imagination exercise and it's focused around mindfulness. So imagining a person at school who feels really good, what makes them feel good? And they're kind of guided around the school and asked to reflect on these things. And I think providing this reflective space is actually really important. It's not often we have these types of spaces in our jammed curriculum. And in part two, as I mentioned, we were moving beyond these building blocks of hedonic well-being to think about what it means to set a goal and achieve a goal at school. And the starter activity for this was for the children to think about people in their lives who have achieved a goal. What was their goal? How did they get there? How did they feel when they were pursuing that goal? Did they feel apprehensive? Did they feel nervous? Did they feel pressured? Did they feel proud? You know, what are those good feelings we talked about? What are those less good feelings? How do they interact when we're motivated and working towards a goal? And again, this is aligned with the statutory guidance. The government talk about achieving goals, academic and personal, sticking to tasks, etc. The learning objective here you can see is about setting goals. And it involved the children writing a letter to a friend at school who was working towards a goal. So they're kind of writing a letter to give them advice. And the idea with all of this is that through thinking about friends and imaginary individuals, that they're reflecting on their own well-being without being as direct as that, obviously. So I just wanted to remind you, this is the kind of framework that I work to. It's a needs-based approach to child development. And really in these workshops, we're looking at, you know, from belonging up. So we're thinking about what it means to feel good, the subjective well-being. We're going beyond the objective. And children talk a lot about connectedness with others as a key indicator, as a key qualitative experience for them. If they feel loved, they feel cared for, they feel connected, you know, that they feel good, they experience good emotion. So it's really looking at how can schools serve as need facilitating environments for children, and what does it mean for them to feel well? So that's all from me. I just wanted to end with a couple of quotes from the young people themselves. You can see here, they found it useful to have a space where they could express their feelings. This is not something that's usually maybe talked about. And also this kind of reflective and kind of inquisitive space that was created in the second workshop for them to think a bit more deeply about what their personal goals are, how everybody has goals, but you don't just get there. It's not instant gratification. that actually, you know, there is a kind of delayed gratification there, but also that goals can take any form. You know, it can be about relationships, it can be about other elements of one's life. So I think that is all from me. Just to summarise then, the government have underlined the importance of wellbeing for raising achievement, but what I'm advocating is a whole child approach. And this is one where, you know, schools are responsible for teaching children, not just maths, English and geography or whatever it is. Ancient, well, the Egyptians is one of the topics that comes up again and again. The kids love the Egyptians. But we also need to teach children about wellbeing, about different psychological traits kind of implicitly, about their ability to, you know, think about their thinking and their emotions. And I also strongly believe that we are better together and that we, you know, need to be working as researchers, teachers, CAMHS, charities, everybody together to really better understand how academic outcomes are linked to children's wellbeing. And I strongly believe schools are absolutely key to this jigsaw puzzle. So thank you very much. Please feel free to email me if you want any further information about the workshops. It would be a pleasure to speak to you. So thank you.